Pod Doctors is brought to you by the Kindle book, Saving Limbs, Saving Lives, Advanced Treatments to Prevent Amputations in Diabetic Populations. This book by Dr. Damien Dauphiné discusses specific patient cases in diabetic limb preservation, which highlight the modern use of wound care technology that has exploded in the last 20 years. With only one advanced therapy available in 1999, there are now hundreds of options to help close chronic wounds in diabetic patients. Dr. Dauphiné distills these options down to show patients and physicians treating these patients how combinations of these products can be used to save limbs and save lives. Welcome to the Pod Doctors. I'm Dr. Damien Dauphiné, board-certified foot and ankle surgeon, and my partner, Dr. Refa Hussein, fellowship-trained podiatric surgeon, and we are the Pod Doctors. Each week, the Pod Doctors will be discussing aspects of podiatric medicine and surgery to educate our audience on common foot and ankle problems and the latest treatment options available. We hope to bring you interesting and informative shows each week discussing all the crazy ways that our wonderful foot can malfunction and cause us problems. So please find us on all the platforms where you find your typical podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and YouTube, where you can view our videos. So please like and subscribe, and we will see you next time on The Pod Doctors. Welcome to The Pod Doctors. I'm Dr. Damien Dauphiné, and I'm here with my partner,
Dr. Rafi Hussein.
You know, Rafi, I like to think that we're early adopters.
Yeah, pretty modern.
You know, we try to stick with the latest stuff to an extent. We like to let other people beta test it. But at the same time, artificial intelligence is here to stay. And ChatGPT and GPT-4 have really come on the scene since last November. And it's been unbelievable. I think I heard a stat that the users of ChatGPT, it was the fastest app ever to hit 100 million users, like faster than TikTok by a significant margin.
It was 3 months, they said, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely unbelievable adoption.
Yeah.
And there's I think the worry is that this is happening so fast and people are just now trying to get a handle on what this means for the future, for all kinds of things, for how we work. Certain types of jobs may end up becoming obsolete because of this type of technology.
I've seen people put in, like, make me a web page or a script or, you know, like, whatever, in this whatever format. I'm not a computer guy. And they'll literally put it out and they'll copy and paste it and put it into their, I don't know, whatever window. And they'll make literally that website almost like it's in a matter of seconds. It's crazy.
If you have access to AutoGPT and you have the software packages that would be required to do some of these coding, these coding needs, you could literally have AutoGPT build you an app for a phone, and it would do it just based on your needs and your text and your queries.
College students are using them to write their essays. It's to the point where schools are like in a real problem where how do you filter out, because each essay they write is a little bit different, right? So it's not exactly the same. So it's not like you're copying someone's bibliography or something like that, where there's no copy and paste going on besides exactly from ChatGPT, which obviously they can't figure out how to do.
I was talking to my son. I have an 18-year-old just graduated from high school, and I was asking him. I was like, you know, have you used it? And he goes, yeah, it's been helpful for creating a sort of a plan for what I want to write about.
Yeah.
He goes, I've never used it to just simply write the entire essay. He said that, you know, theoretically would get me in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But he said it was really helpful at helping to sort of consolidate his thoughts, get some good background information, maybe get an overview of what he wanted to write about. And so, you know, I think as a tool, it's like anything else. It can be used for good, and it can make people more efficient. It can make them more concise in their writing, possibly.
There's companies that are using these smart AIs to do stock changes, stock management. You know, like if you have like a whatever portfolio or whatever
sure.
new young company that's taking advantage of this, they're claiming upwards of 12% versus the standard 8%.
You know,
it's crazy.
It's going to change the way we do lots of things. And so I think one of the goals for today's podcast was to kind of explore, play around with ChatGPT as far as medical knowledge is concerned and really sort of critique some of the answers to some of these queries. I think if you get specific enough, you can get some good information.
Yeah.
You know, we joked around and did a few the other day just for fun. And I asked it who's better equipped to treat foot and ankle problems, orthopedic surgeons or podiatric surgeons. And it gave a very middle of the road, straightforward answer. Of course, it said we were better, but you know, I'm joking, but it did. It did highlighted the fact that, you know, we do this stuff for a living. Some orthopedic surgeons do foot and ankle for a living as well. But in general, you know, we're really well positioned to treat foot and ankle problems.
I mean,
and
statistically, we do more foot and ankle surgery than any than other specialty.
Exactly. So I think it was a very, I think, really well consolidated answer that, you know, may have already fit my preconceived notions. But despite that fact, I still thought it was a good answer.
Yeah. So we wanted to see if you have, you know, aches and pains, if you have some problem going on, can you throw in your symptoms and see if ChatGPT can give you somewhat of a right answer and figure out if you can treat it, fix it, diagnose it, and what the, you know, prognosis and treatment plan of your problem is.
Yeah, better than an average Google search.
Yeah,
is it going to be something better? Jeeves. Yeah, is it Ask Jeeves or and the other interesting thing is, I think, which we may want to consider looking at too, is how much better or worse is ChatGPT compared to Bard, which is Google's version, right? And there have been some critiques of both for specific queries. ChatGPT seems to hold up pretty strongly. And
yeah.
You know, this is OpenAI. It's a smaller company, clearly backed by some big money. I think Microsoft has invested a bunch of money with them to potentially convert their search engine Bing into more of an AI-based search engine.
Smart move.
Yeah, potentially very smart move. So you've got a few queries that you threw up here. So this is cool.
For people who don't know what ChatGPT is, it's literally an online computer system that you type in a question or whatever request, and it can spit out information to you.
So it's an LLM. So it's a large language model.
Yeah.
And so it's basically consolidating trillions of data points, potentially trillions,
yeah.
and allowing you to basically query the entire internet. But it's going to do it in a focused way, which is really helpful.
So we thought we'd throw some cases at it, some similar in presentation cases that we see, and see if they can diagnose the diagnosis we made. So first case, 44-year-old male, right plantar heel pain, no history of trauma, sharp pain with pressure, no pain when resting, worse first step in the morning, hint, nudge, gets better with walking. All right. So let's pop this open. Let's copy this.
And usually you're going to get a disclaimer where it says it's not diagnosing, you know, but it's interesting to see what it says here.
So I say we just start off with the first half, right?
Yeah, don't give it too much information.
Yeah, I want to start off with simple, right? I probably should have said diagnosis.
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
All right, so it's given some differentials. First differential is plantar fasciitis. Second differential is heel spurs, which is the same thing as plantar fasciitis.
For the most part, yeah.
Achilles tendonitis, stress fracture, tarsal tunnel syndrome. And for those of you who want to read through this, obviously just pause the video and read through. It says important to see a healthcare professional such as a podiatrist.
There you go.
Maybe it's listening to us.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So I think, you know, that's a pretty, I think, specific differential diagnosis.
Really accurate. I mean, honestly, a lot of this stuff I would be trying to rule out.
Go back up. Let's read a little bit what it says about plantar fasciitis. So
plantar fasciitis, this is the most common cause of heel pain. It occurs when the plantar fascia, a thick band of tissue that runs along the bottom of the foot, becomes inflamed or irritated. It often causes sharp or stabbing pain in the heel, especially with the first steps in the morning or after a period of rest. That's a great dyskinesia.
That's a great description. And in lay terms, easy to understand.
Yeah.
the heel spur aspect, I think we know, you know, the heel spurs are a part of this syndrome, but they're not the source of the pain in the vast majority of cases.
So
that may be a little overblown with regard to the heel spur aspect of this. We don't chase heel spurs down anymore. We don't
grind
shave
them off.
Yeah. Because we know that's not really the answer.
So let's say you're like, all right, I'm having heel pain. Let me put in some more diagnoses, right? No sure. History of trauma, no sharp pain, worse with first step in the morning.
Let's see what it gives us. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Plantar fasciitis often presents with the following characteristics. Sharp pain with pressure, no pain when resting, worse with the first step in the morning. I mean, it's literally gets better.
If this was all it took, we would be out of a job.
Dude, honestly, I'm kind of worried. Once computers start giving, you know, surgeries and steroid shots and all that orthotics and whatnot, I think we'll be out of a profession here soon.
Maybe
we can make ChatGPT an associate.
There you go. We could pay him $60,000
a year. Just roll in a laptop into a room.
It's funny because I really do think that for certain disease states that we don't run into routinely, possibly some of the more obscure skin lesions that we might see, it would be nice to be able to plug those signs and symptoms into this and see what it comes up with. Because it might help you, I think, sort of cone down your differential diagnosis. So, I could see this being helpful for some of the more obscure stuff that we see that you just don't see. Because, I mean, if you drill down, we probably see the same 12 to 15 things all day, every day. And, you know, it's things like plantar fasciitis, bunions, hammer toes, ingrown toenails, skin lesions, posterior tibial tendonitis, Achilles tendonitis, fractures,
lateral ankle sprains.
Absolutely. So it's the same 12 to 15 things. But when you get beyond that, some of these things you may only see once or twice a year. Yeah. You may see some obscure pediatric things that you could plug in those symptoms and see if it'll cone it down to this degree. This is great. So I don't have a problem with this at all. It's got the disclaimer. It's, you know, basically saying, hey, look, you need to go see a healthcare professional, I think, to get fully worked up. But, you know, this isn't going to provide x-rays. It's not going to provide any further diagnosis. But
we're not worried.
This isn't bad.
The fact is, a lot of people don't realize that we're already using computer systems that help us with diagnoses all the time. Every time we get a surgery booked, we have to get an EKG the morning of, right? Mm-hmm. And on top of the EKG, the machine itself will read out, you know, atrial flutter, arrhythmia, you know, sinus tachycardia, whatever. And obviously, we're not seeing any of the crazy stuff. You know, if you go to an ER, it'll read it out all of, you know, MI, you know, blah, blah. But it's telling you what it suspects the diagnosis. Obviously, in the end, it's up to the physician, the doctor who's reading it, to tell you what it is.
Because some of that, you're going to get overreads.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be something that might be triggering that particular potential diagnosis, but not clinically relevant. So, I mean, that's still why you need cardiologists.
Yeah, they have those new stethoscopes that came out like 5-10 years ago with the little battery in the otoscope end, or the whatever it's called, the drum end. Mm-hmm. And it can upload it to your computer and it can tell you what it suspects
the sound
that you're listening to, you know, atrial flutter, arrhythmias, blah, blah.
So these all, I think, have tremendous applications that we're just tapping into that may be able to level the playing field between physicians. So
let's see what I can do to treat plantar.
So we'll see if it gets into some of the more specific.
It's disclaimer in the beginning. Yeah. Rest, ice, stretch. All right, good. Supportive footwear. Orthotics, consider orthotics.
Night splint.
Good. Therapy. I didn't think it would say that. Physical therapy, NSAIDs, corticosteroid injections. Good. Extra. Wow.
I'll be darned.
I'm actually impressed with that.
Surgery in rare cases. There you go.
So that's very impressive. Let's just start from the beginning. Rest, ice. Obviously, with any type of injury, you want to rest, ice, elevate. Mm-hmm. Stretching. That's literally the first thing I say.
Yeah.
Stretching is
targeting the calf muscle.
Yeah. There you go. Plantar fascia and the Achilles calf muscle. Those are the two biggest stretches you got to do. Supportive footwear, which also includes consider using orthotic inserts.
Yeah.
Which slam dunk.
There you go.
Night splints. I know we prescribe those left and right. Absolutely. Those things are so good.
It's one of the best ways of reducing morning pain. That's hysterical. So this is really, you know, I'm duly impressed.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think it's not a bad route to go. It seems to be significantly better than just your general
Google search.
Well, and the other thing is you're not getting inundated with ads.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're not getting inundated with, okay, all the snake oil. Oh, geez. You're not getting inundated with the snake oil salesman crap in the middle of your search. So that's really pretty cool.
All right. So let's go to our second case. I put three together that are very similar in presentation. Yeah. So 23-year-old female, right medial arch and ankle pain, no history of trauma, constant ache, tender to touch, worse the longer she walks on it, and pain when standing on tippy toes. I put that in there because, I don't know, some people have said that like, you know, whenever I'm going up and down stairs or going onto my toes or they'll do the motion, the heel rise test that we do, and they'll say this. So I thought I'd throw it in there. It kind of helps out too.
So this is going to be a subtle distinction from plantar fasciitis now going into the posterior tibial tendonitis.
All right. So let's start with
the
basics first.
Because it didn't mention
PTT, posterior tibial tendonitis. All right.
There's your disclaimer.
Flat feet. So PTT is most common in flat foot.
Correct.
Excessive pronation.
So it still could be plantar fasciitis. So that's not bad.
Medial ankle sprain, very uncommon. Those deltoid ligament sprains.
Tarsal tunnel syndrome. That's a possibility. Oh,
there you go. Posterior tibialitis.
Oh, nice. There you go. That's not half bad.
I'm very impressed. So say you get these responses and you're like, all right, let me type in the symptoms. So let me just type that in and see what it tells us.
So that was just with medial arch and ankle pain. Okay, so now you're coming it down with more
broad
information.
A diagnosis.
Then number two is tendonitis. There you go.
Posterior tib tendonitis.
Yeah.
PTTD.
There you go. Oh my God.
That's really good. That's very impressive.
That's awesome.
I'm going to just start bringing my laptop into the patient's room and just start talking in.
Start ChatGPT.
Whenever they start talking to me.
Oh man.
All right.
This is really, it's I think it's, I'm duly impressed. I mean, it really does a fairly accurate job of, with basic information, distinguishing between plantar fasciitis and tendonitis or PTTD.
Yeah.
I think that's great. That's awesome.
So let's see what it recommends are the treatments for PTTD. Let's see if it even remembers what PTTD is. Oh, there we go.
There you go. Yep.
Posterior tibial tendon dysfunction. Rest and activity modification, immobilization, good.
Orthotic device, AFOs, look at that. Physical therapy.
NSAIDs. Bracing. So I almost always put my patient to like a figure eight brace. I love those things. So we don't do steroid shots around the posterior tibial tendon.
I agree. I think the risks of rupture are probably too great. That's why we don't do it around the Achilles.
Look,
either.
We said that and it stopped. Is it really listening? I swear.
No, we just got to the end. Injection. However, these injections are typically used with caution. It's barely due to potential side effects.
Oh my God, they're listening to us.
OpenAI, I think you guys are totally listening to us. Surgery and severe. Is it just slow because of our Wi-Fi or something?
I have no idea.
Okay. There's too many people using ChatGPT right now.
Too many doctors using ChatGPT right now.
To try to diagnose their patients. This is really remarkable.
So I'm just going to start from the top while it's finishing the rest. Rest size elevate modification, obviously.
Slam dunk.
Immobilization. A lot of times patients will go to the ER or urgent care center before they come see us. They'll put them in a boot, which I think is great, especially with really bad cases.
Yeah.
Orthotics. Usually further down the line, I do like to get patients into orthotics, but AFOs are a little bit more on the aggressive side. I'd say 80-90% of the time, most patients will be able to do just orthotics and they won't need an AFO. The difference between a AFO versus an orthotic, I'm more talking about, is like the ankle portion, the high ankle brace that's custom made.
We use those for more chronic cases that are heading towards the need for surgery.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can stave it off with an AFO.
Yeah. Physical therapy, usually down the line, is a good option if things aren't getting better. Medications, obviously NSAIDs, ibuprofen, naproxen, Aleve, I'll write for a steroid pack quite often, you know, if it's really bad. Bracing, I do love my figure eight brace. I think they're super helpful. They're a bit of a nuisance to put on, but it's a necessary evil. Steroid shots, like we talked about.
Yeah, but I think it's used with caution, sparingly. Yeah. I think that's
if I do a steroid shot, I mean, very rarely, but if I do a steroid shot, I'll put them in a boot and tell them to stay off of it for the next 4 weeks. I mean, this would be on the cautious side.
I think that's
high risk of rupture rates with any type of tendon and you're walking on tendon. And then surgery, obviously. And when we talk about surgery, and we've dove into this, the posterior tibia tendonitis flat foot surgery episodes, surgery, we're fixing the foot structure, not so much the tendon. We can do tendon work, but obviously if you're only addressing the tendon, the foot structure is always going to be the origin of the problem. The tendonitis is just the secondary effect of it, right?
That's really pretty remarkable.
Honestly, that was pretty impressive.
Yep.
All right, let's go to our last one.
Okay.
All right, third case. 40-year-old male, plantar foot pain, no history of trauma. Sounds similar to before, right? Sharp tingling, burning pain, sometimes feels numb, worse at night. So a little bit different than our plantar. Oops.
So you're heading towards tarsal tunnel syndrome.
Yeah, I try to
throw it off a little bit.
What sounds very similar, but also how patients presented to us.
Sure.
Aside from doing our physical exam.
I like it.
Or I'm not going to do plantar foot pain because it's going to give us our differential again.
Okay.
Not a doctor.
I can provide some general information.
I mean, I'm happy they put that "I'm not a doctor" thing because I could imagine patients typing in their symptoms, treating whatever problem they think it is, and only to find out something more severe and trying to sue ChatGPT, you know?
One possibility, nerve-related condition. Look at that.
Tarsal tunnel syndrome.
Nailed it right off the bat.
Wow. That's very impressive. Our internet is going extremely slow here, but I'm still impressed nonetheless. This condition occurs when the tibial nerve, which runs along the inside of the ankle and foot, becomes compressed or irritated. It can cause sharp tingling, burning pain. I mean, that's spot on. And numbness.
This is great. So, yeah, I think another win for ChatGPT on diagnosing a very subtle but completely different source of plantar foot pain.
You know what I'd be happy to see? Is if they come out with a version of smart AI where you can take a picture of like a dermal lesion or a picture of an X-ray.
It's not far.
I've seen it. I've seen an app. I mean, this is me just being, you know, the guy who does lawn care as a hobby / whatever you want to call it. I've seen ones where you can take pictures of weeds and it'll tell you what the weeds are.
And then
it'll tell you exactly how to treat it. What products, what are the active ingredients that you should be looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to the point where I think smart AI systems are going to be so commonly used 5-10 years from now, maybe even sooner, honestly, that it's just going to be just like, you know, Google searching was, is right now, whenever I tell someone to go search for something, I don't go online and search for it. I say, go Google it, you know?
I think this is the next iteration of search.
Yeah.
Obviously this is a much more powerful iterative process that I think makes these so much more effective. I mean, this is great. It's talking about peripheral neuropathy. It's talking about tarsal tunnel syndrome, and then just general nerve entrapment.
Yeah, it's telling you that it's the nerve problem.
Yeah,
that's the most important key thing.
Exactly.
Obviously, it's not doing a physical exam. It's not doing any diagnostic testing. It's not doing any type of nerve blocks or et cetera,
But really, half of diagnosing patients is listening to their description of their concern.
All you young docs out there.
Yeah.
I want you to pay attention to that.
Do a good history.
Seriously.
And if you suck at history, just plug it into ChatGPT because it'll tell you what it is.
Here, tell me your symptoms here, please. Thank you.
And just start talking away. That's really remarkable. So, yeah, this is the wave of the future, I think. They're already using smart AI systems for doing mammography.
Yeah.
It's providing, I think, really detailed information for radiologists that are looking at breast cancer. It tends to do a better job than even the physician at isolating small, very difficult to see lesions. So
yeah, imagine going through an MRI that has, 80 pictures in the sagittal plane, 90 pictures in the coronal plane, and like 120 pictures in the frontal plane. I mean, you're going through all these pictures trying to diagnose the problem. So the radiologist really has to be very thorough. And when you have computer assistance on one side helping you out, finding all the small things that you may miss, you know, think about like a person who has like some type of cancer, it's, you know, it's metastasized. Yeah, you're going to find the big ones, but are you going to find all those small ones?
And I think for skin lesions, for us, yeah. I mean, we do, you know, deal with a lot of dermatologic issues. And being able to distinguish between something that's just eczema versus psoriatic plaque versus yeast infection, you know, the difference between lichen planus and just a general nail dystrophy,
yeah.
onychomycosis, it would be helpful to, yeah. Okay, I think I know what this is. I'm going to send a sample out. But if you could take a picture and have a dermatologic database run that query for you and say, yeah, this is what you're dealing with, it would be nice as a adjunct to be yeah. able to confirm what we think we already know.
Yeah, and in the bottom, it'll say in italics or whatever, not a diagnosis, must consult your healthcare provider, right. blah, blah, blah.
But I think these systems are going to be designed for physicians to be able oh, yeah. to make us more accurate.
Imagine getting someone's great. Blood work, right? And then it just reading through the blood work. I mean, I wish... Ugh.
Yeah.
I wish I'm around when this happens, which I'm hoping it's going to be sooner than later.
I don't think it's far off.
You know what the nice thing about ChatGPT is? It knew that we were going to ask for the treatment plan. So it gave us a diagnosis, right? The tarsal tunnel, the peripheral nerve entrapment, neuropathy. And then it says, once a diagnosis is made, appropriate treatment options. It knew that I was going to ask for that. So medications, gabapentin, pregabalin, Lyrica, which we talk about, gabapentin, we talk about all the time. Topical creams, you can do like, you know, topical lidocaines. You can do, you know, capsaicins, you know, Voltarens if you need to. Physical therapy, you know, so nerve gliding techniques, let's see, to help relieve symptoms, improve nerve function, promote foot health. So more specifically, nerve flossing, nerve gliding things to stretch out the nerve. Orthotic devices, remember we spoke about this before, mm-hmm. tarsal tunnel syndrome that's
being mediated by pronation, right? Yeah. By flat foot, so.
That tunnel is made by that flexor retinaculum, and it's pushing down on that nerve.
And then I think management of underlying conditions. That next section there is really nice to
diabetes
see.
Diabetes or vitamin B12 right. deficiency, very common.
You
diabetes,
get those under control.
Super common.
So cool.
Wow, that's impressive. I'm very, very impressed.
Yes, I think this is clearly AI is here to stay. I think we're going to be hopefully finding new and more interesting ways of using this. Clearly, there's some concern about the dangers of AI.
iRobot. Remember that
yeah. movie? I mean, if you get on a podcast specific about AI, there's one that I listened to by Nathaniel Whittemore, which is he's got a podcast called The Breakdown, where they talk about big picture stuff, big macro stuff, and then looking at crypto and other new technologies. He's got one that he's doing called The Breakdown AI, where they're updating information like daily on use cases for this and, wow. and what's going down between Bard and ChatGPT and what people are concerned about and why.
But I don't know if you saw, you know, obviously on social media, I saw a quick thing where they had the creator or owner or CEO of ChatGPT.
Altman.
He was in front of Congress and he's like, look, we need restrictions on this. We need control on this. This thing is like... Yeah. fire right now.
Elon Musk has warned about the dangers of AI for years.
Yeah.
And I think the scary part is that these systems are already up and running and they're out there and people can use them for good or for bad, I suppose, at this stage.
Yeah.
Their guardrails, there aren't a lot of guardrails right now. But you can see the applicability of some of these things.
The benefits.
The benefits look like right now they outweigh the dangers, but it's probably because we haven't even thought about some of the things that could go wrong.
Too many horror movies already I've seen about that stuff.
So I think it's here to stay. I think when you utilize it in the right way, it can be extremely powerful. We've found, I think, just doing searches with it, it's providing some pretty decent information, some pretty well thought out answers to these questions and potentially far better than just your general Google search on whether or not you've got X, Y, and Z diagnosis.
Yeah.
Now, again, Google's got Bard out there that I'm sure they're going to dial into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dial into all of their apps. And so it seems to be fairly equivalent. I have seen some head-to-head comparisons for certain technological offshoots, and they came up pretty close. You know, it was almost equivalent. Some answers seem to be better with ChatGPT than others for specific. So it'll be interesting how these language models get bigger and more effective. But this is the wave of the future. So,
and if you guys like this type of content, please let us know. I try to do some of the stuff we see most often that are very similar in diagnosis. We can definitely go down ankle pain, whatever it might be. Just let us know, and we can easily.
This is a rabbit hole we could jump down for a long time.
Yeah, quite some time.
But it'll be cool to see how this develops, and even maybe even more specifically for medicine. So these are just general large language models, and so we'll see how this develops over the next 2 or 3 years. But yeah, it's here to stay. So thank you, Dr. Hussain. That was a great one. So that is our first foray into ChatGPT, and I'm sure we will do this more as these large language models develop. So thanks again. We will see you next time on the Pod Doctors.
Thank you for listening to the Pod Doctors. We appreciate all of our listeners and subscribers. If you'd like to hear more, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and watch our videos on YouTube. Like, thumbs up, subscribe. Be safe. See y'all next time. Bye-bye.